You are listening to the Fresh Take Network.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, all you wonderful F1 fans. We are back. That is right. It is the first race of the second half. It is round 14 from Spa, also known as the Belgian Grand Prix. And if you're hearing my voice, I can only mean one thing, that it's race weekend. My name is Kelsey, and this is F101. Well, let's just get right into it. We're going to start off with the hot topics. One major hot topic coming up this week is that Audi has officially announced that they are joining F1 in 2026. Now, I had mentioned this several weeks earlier in the first half of the season that Audi and Porsche will be joining F1 in 2026, respectively. Both part of the Volkswagen Motor Group. Nothing really new with this announcement as per se. It's just finally they've come out to say that they're officially joining it, and that they would be joining a specific team. Now, they didn't really know, or nobody knew who the specific team was. There were rumors that it might have been McLaren. There were rumors that it might have been a few other teams. Well, the team itself had kind of decided that it would make the announcement for everybody else without any kind of press release, without any kind of, you know, glamour or glitz. Alfa Romeo has officially stated that the partnership with Sauber Motorsports will be ending in 2023. This will, you know, it's 90% done. Everybody knows the writing's on the wall. You just got to say it, that Audi will be joining the Sauber Racing Group for 2026. Now, I'm extraordinarily excited and very interested to see what Audi can do when they come to Formula One. And there's a couple of specific reasons for it. The first one is, when Audi joins in 2026, they will be the team. So it's not going to be the Audi sports team with the Sauber, you know, sponsorship behind it. It will be an Audi race team from start to finish. Audi is putting some serious money into development and to building buildings and research and all that kind of fun stuff. They are producing the car and the car parts from front to back, top to bottom. They will not just be another logo on the car itself. They will be the supplier of every part of that vehicle, where if you look at Alfa Romeo, it's just essentially a fancy sticker on a car, and they don't contribute anything to the actual development of the car itself. They're not providing new engine parts, new engine designs, or anything along that kind of development line. It's just the name, it's just the logo. So I think for Sauber that this was an amazing opportunity, and one that they definitely are going to take and are very smart to take, because it's going to be in the hands of a very well-established motor company. They know what they're doing. They've been in multiple different kinds of supercar races. They've got the research behind them. They also have the history and, more importantly, the financing behind it. They will be able to fix problems faster. They're not going to have to go out to a third party or a second party to get anything fixed, modified, or come up with new designs that are within the FIA regulations. So, Sauber, fantastic idea, fantastic signing. Alfa Romeo, you're done in 2023, which means Sauber will take on the majority of the financial responsibilities from 2023 until 2026 when Audi comes in, and then it'll officially be the Audi F1 team. Now, what the car will look like, we don't know. What the colors will look like, we don't quite know yet. But all we know for sure is that Audi's in there, and I think they're going to do a lot better than Porsche. And the reason why I say that is that Porsche has, you know, car development, they got engine development, they have their own super race series, all that kind of fun stuff. All that stuff is great, except for the engine development and the engine building itself will still be based in the UK with the Red Bull Racing group or corporation, depending on how you want to look at it. So, I mean, it's not getting moved to Germany where Porsche gets everything developed, where their main headquarters is, not like Audi's doing. This will be the first German car produced from front to back in 20 years. It'll be a much welcome change to the grid. I think Porsche is really missing out on the opportunity and should really follow in Audi's footsteps. If your development team is based in at home, why would you move everything to the UK just to, you know, satisfy the Red Bull fans and the Red Bull developers? I think Porsche is going to have a little bit of a hard time to catch up to Audi in that kind of development. That being said, Porsche and Red Bull are going to have a massive advantage with the Honda engine that Red Bull is running now, opposed to the Ferrari engine, I do believe, that Alfa Romeo is running. So they've got some advantages, some disadvantages, but Audi officially announces that they will be in 2026. Alfa Romeo sponsorship will officially end in 2023. And, I mean, who knows where Sauber is going to end up? Is this the end of the Sauber Racing Corporation? Will they become a sponsor for Audi? Will it be, you know, a eyes only partnership where Audi runs everything in the background? Are they going to be more partners in this? Is it going to be 50-50, you know, development and deliberation and votes on what they do and what they don't do? Only time's going to tell. It's going to be a very, very interesting incorporation to the Formula One, and I'm very excited to see what will happen when both teams finally hit the track in 2026. Other fantastic news, it was announced today that Spa will be back on the schedule for 2023. Their contract had run out at the end of this race this weekend, so no one had really known what was going to happen. Spa is one of the oldest and one of the longest tracks in the F1 circuit. First race, official F1 race in Spa was in 1950, so this race has really been around, you know, quite a bit. The track's been heavily modified. It's shorter than what it was before, and it's a lot safer than it used to be, which is, you know, great for everybody, for especially the drivers and all the pit crews and that kind of stuff. So, unfortunately, with Spa coming back for 2023, it has been rumored that the South African track, the talks had broken down, and that they are no longer in consideration for a race in at least 2023 and for the near future. So hopefully the South Africans, you know, can get all the I's dotted and the T's crossed and, you know, get back on track. I'd love to see a track from South Africa. I've never seen any kind of racing from South Africa or anywhere around there. So I think it'll be a very, very interesting place to drive. Again, it would be a very hot track, and they were going to be, or the rumor was at least, that it was going to be a non-street track. So this was a track specifically developed for Formula One and auto racing in South Africa. So hopefully they can get that back on track, and hopefully we'll see them, you know, hopefully 2024, maybe 2025 if things get a little delayed. And that's kind of officially it, or that is officially it for the hot topics this week. It's kind of nice to have a shorter list of hot topics. That just means that there aren't as many rumors and he said, she said going around and speculations and all that kind of fun stuff. They're concentrating more on the race this weekend, which is amazing to say. There are still a bunch of drivers that still don't have seats for next year. Yuki Tsunoda still hasn't been signed yet. Williams only has one driver as of this moment, same with Alfa Romeo. You know, Zhou Guanyu doesn't have a seat yet. Latifi doesn't have a seat for next season. You know, all of that kind of signing and drama is still yet to come. There's only 8 races left after this weekend, so I would expect a flurry of signings and a bunch of new names that will pop up in the next couple of weeks, hopefully before the end of the season. That way I can keep everybody here updated and with the best information that I can possibly get. So, without further ado, let's move on to qualifying and the race itself. So, qualifying itself was a little bit tricky this year not because of the weather, not because anything, you know, super complicated. It just was for the fact that 7 drivers were taking grid penalties for various part upgrades. Some guys had more of a grid penalty than others. It all depends on how many parts you're replacing and how many parts over the limit from the Formula One FIA that you have gone over. So the more parts you have, the lower down the grid you fall, no matter where you qualify. And if you've reached certain numbers of parts replaced, the bigger grid you fall. So we've got some pretty big names that actually had grid penalties this week. people like Max Verstappen, Charles Leclerc, Lando Norris, Esteban Ocon, Bottas, Schumacher, and a couple others, they all had various grid penalties. Lando Norris had one. So the big ones you're looking at are Max Verstappen and Charles Leclerc. They got brand new power units again this race. I believe this is Max's fifth this season, I do believe. It's just the standard. You're going to start at the back of the grid. And then Charles Leclerc, also brand new power unit. Again, you're going to start at the back of the grid. So that goes that you, the farther you drive and the better times you get, the higher ahead you're going to be of your competition. So everybody else, Ocon, Lando, Bottas, Schumacher, Joe, sorry, it was the other one. Joe Guan Yu also had a grid penalty. They are getting a number of parts replaced, so they're taking a 10-spot grid penalty. So wherever they finish in qualifying, they're going to be knocked down 10 spots from there. Now, with all of these guys with grid penalties, it gives an opportunity to shake up the starting lineup for the race on Sunday. And it also gives an opportunity to make it a little more interesting because the champions and the champion has to come essentially from the back of the grid, and he has to get to work his way through. It's only 44 laps. It's not a super long race, but it also gives a lot of opportunity for people who normally wouldn't get a lot of points to get those points. So qualifying itself was fairly straightforward. Everyone's making the lap times. People who are at the bottom were naturally at the bottom. Guys who are at the top were actually at the top. But what you did see this time is when we made it into Q3 is you saw a lot of double teammates, so both Red Bulls, both Ferraris, even though only one of each of those drivers would actually be in the actual grid spot, and both Mercedes, none of them had the Mercedes did not have any grid penalties, but you saw a lot of double teams. They were helping each other. It was giving each other toes. It was helping, somebody break a slipstream, helping somebody get DRS around the corners, just getting those extra lap times to bump their partner higher and higher up in the standings, for the starting race. It was fantastic to see. It was great to see all of the teamwork and all of the, fast times and the really smart strategies this time, and smart strategies from everybody. There weren't a whole lot of major hiccups. Unfortunately, the only hiccup in qualifying when it came to the buddy-buddy system was, I'm going to give you three guesses and the first two don't count. It was Ferrari, surprise, surprise. They gave Charles Leclerc, who was supposed to help Carlos Sainz get a nice toe, get a nice fast line, and instead of giving him brand new slick tires, they gave him, I think it was like 18 lap old, previously used soft tires. And he noticed halfway through the lap, letting the pit crew know, it's like, hey, what's with these tires? And as soon as he said it, of course, the strategists come on the line and go, that's our fault. No shit. It's new tires or they're old tires. You can tell the difference. Old tires don't get covered with heated blankets, and you can see how worn they are. So somebody obviously not paying attention yet again. It didn't really have a massive impact this time, but still, it's the little things that add up over and over and over again that prevent these guys from getting the times they need and getting the championship points that they need as well. So again, everyone just sits back and watch Ferrari, screw themselves out of top spot or fastest lap or something along that line. Did it again today, not nearly as bad as it normally was, but the buddy system for Ferrari today actually worked really, really well. The timing was great. Red Bull. So Q3, Red Bull was in there. Both drivers were driving around, except then Max just stopped. He came in, he did a couple of laps, and then he just got out of. He parked his car, got out, and left Checo all by himself. Yeah, he was starting from the grid spot that he was starting in, but there was no communication that anybody heard, at least on anybody that was watching TV or any of us that are subscribed to F1 TV. You didn't hear any communication between Max and Checo or Max and, the pit crew or Horner or anybody like that going, hey, you're done, come on into the pit lane. It was a closed circuit communication. Nobody heard it, and Max just decided to come in. He's done for the day, leaving Checo all out by himself with no partner to tow with and to give him that faster lap. Turned out Checo didn't need it, so obviously they knew something that nobody else needed to know, that they knew that Checo was going to be able to kill it on his own. He didn't need the tow from Max. He was cruising along just fine, and it worked out. You know, it worked out very, very well for Red Bull in the end. But it looked like a dick move. Like, yeah, okay, Max, the champion. Okay, you're not finishing first. You're not going to be first on grid. You're not going to be pole. So why not help out your partner? Why not give him that extra time and that extra speed that he needs to maybe get on pole himself? It just looked like that he was, you know, that, I'm done for the day. He's decided he's done. I'm not going to get first. I'm just going to sit back, relax, let my partner work by himself all alone and see how well he can do. It kind of looked like he was pouting. I don't think it was a very smart move on his case. It didn't make him look very good, although I don't really think he cares what the optics look like or what we think. They know what they're doing. They're championship drivers, obviously. But still, it didn't look really good that Max just kind of abandoned his partner when he could have used that extra toe. But hey, they know what they're doing. We're just armchair quarterbacks. We're just armchair drivers. So obviously, they knew something we don't. It just didn't look really good. But after everything was all said and done, even though he wasn't going to start on pole, Max Verstappen did finish with the fastest time, so he would have started on pole, which helped him substantially when it came to the final standings. Leclerc did pretty good as well, which also helped him in the standings on where he's going to end up, and you know, just so on and so forth. And then there's a few guys that really should have done a lot better than they did, and they also had some last minute repairs as well just before qualifying, so that really didn't help their situation either. So even though Max did finish first with the fastest time, he actually started the race in 15th spot just because of the grid penalty. So I will give you how the race started out with the grid penalties, not without, because there's no real point in telling you where somebody finished and then where they actually ended up. So at the end of Q1, we had the times looked like this. Mick Schumacher started at the bottom in 20th, Joe in 19th, Lando Norris in 18th, Esteban Ocon in 17th, Leclerc in 16th, Max Verstappen in 15th, Valtteri Bottas was in 14th, Yuki Tsunoda was in 13th, Magnussen was 12th, Latifi was 11th, Sebastian Vettel was 10th, Lance Stroll was 9th. Really nice to see that he actually finally cracked the top 10. He had a really clean race, really fast lines. He was hitting those apexes and he was hitting those turns like he really knew what he was doing, like he really, really meant it, which is great to see. Pierre Gasly was in 8th, you know, top 10 starting is what we expect from him at this point. If he really needs to prove to everybody else that he wants to get out of AlphaTauri, that he wants a better seat, he needs more top 10, if not top 5 grid starts for the races. Then we're looking at Danny Ric in 8th, thank God, or 7th, thank God. He's having a much better race. He needs, like we keep saying, he needs the points. He needs to start looking good for other teams to potentially pick him up for next season or just to have a job in Formula 1 from here on out. Alex Albon in 6th, George Russell in 5th, Lewis Hamilton in 4th, Fernando Alonso in 3rd, Perez in 2nd, and then Carlos Sainz finished 1st. Because of that fantastic tow from his teammate, he did take the top spot once all the penalties were added up. So that is your starting grid for the Spa Grand Prix this weekend. Speaking of the track, so that will start our Belgian Grand Prix this morning, this Sunday. It was a bit of an earlier race. It started at 7, believe, our time. Not too bad, but weather was fantastic. Not a cloud in sight. There was no rain, unlike last year, so they got every single lap in from start to finish. So the Belgian Grand Prix, also known as Spa, first race, 1950. You're looking at 44 laps, 7 kilometers per lap. It is the longest track on the F1 circuit, 19 turns, and because it's such a long track, the top speed that was recorded this Sunday, this morning, was 350 kilometers an hour by Alex Albon. I don't know about you, but I have absolutely no idea what traveling 350k would even feel like, let alone look like. You sneeze, you blink, you fart the wrong way, you're in the wall, you're missing your turn. These guys were absolutely hauling ass this morning, and it really, really, really showed. But before the race could even get underway, there was more drama. Unfortunately for Yuki Tsunoda, he had some technical difficulties first thing in the morning, some mechanical problems, so he wasn't able to even start the race on the grid. Everybody bumped up a spot. Yuki Tsunoda had to start in 20th from the pit lane, which means Max and everybody else got bumped up from 14th and on. Everyone else hopped up a spot, which was great, from 14th back. So The race itself, it was hectic from the first lap until the end of the fifth. These guys were so fast. They were so close. And unfortunately, on the first lap, as it has been a tradition so far this year, apparently we have a collision. We had, I don't want to say a major collision. It did knock out a car. It did damage another one. This crash was absolutely 100% avoidable from one driver, in my opinion, although he did admit that it was his error. This driver does not admit fault very, very often. Unfortunately for him, the crash between Lewis Hamilton and Fernando Alonso, first lap, I believe it was the fifth turn. Picture in your mind, you're racing, you're going straight, and you're getting a hit an S-curve. So you're turning right, and then you're going to go left in a long S. Fernando Alonso is on the inside of that curb. He's going over as far right as he possibly can. Lewis Hamilton is right beside him, and he keeps pushing him further and further right. Then all of a sudden, it goes into the other side of the curb, or into the curve that Alonso has absolutely nowhere to go. Hamilton didn't see him, so what happens is they end up colliding, but it was tire to tire, and what had happened was the way that Alonso and Hamilton touched is that Hamilton went up in the air, his ass went straight up traveling, and it smashed down on the track itself. Now this damaged the front wing of Alonso, and it looked to be like Hamilton just took a massive hit, but he would be able to continue. No major parts flew off. It looked like he'd be able to go. Well, unfortunately, about 15 seconds later in two corners, Lewis Hamilton, you can hear on the radio that his mechanics and his strategists are telling him to box, or just shut off the engine, whichever one you can do. And unfortunately for him, it was a shut off the engine. He was not able to make it all the way around this track and the circuit. And from the camera and the helmet cam from Fernando Alonso, as soon as Hamilton hit that ground, Alonso's face mask was just covered with oil and engine fluid, which means a total engine failure. First lap, fifth turn, Lewis Hamilton's day is done. Unfortunately for him, he was looking really, really strong for this race. He was super confident that he was going to get some points. Super disappointing for him. But hey, that is F1 racing. Fernando Alonso, a little bit of damage to the front wing, but he was able to continue and he was able to finish the race as well. The first lap also showed how much Ferrari has been able to come with their frontline speed. Carlos Sainz started first. He got off the line very, very well. Checo Perez had probably the worst start he has had all season. He got passed by four cars by the first turn. It was just like, in the interview after the race, he did state that he had a lot of slippage. So like he didn't catch any grip off the track. And when he did, the track is so hot and it was such a rough track that it just tore up his tires and he couldn't get any traction. But that being said, the Ferrari off the line, oh my good God, Sainz was gone. He was about 3 to 4 seconds ahead of everybody else into every turn. Great line upgrades. The Ferrari was really looking like they know what they were doing. The pack was trying to hunt them down. It was a very even, a very hectic, but a very, very exciting with lots of passing in the first, you know, 3, 4, 5 laps. And speaking of passing, Max started in 14th. By the end of the fourth lap, he was already up in the 8th spot. This man was driving like the devil himself was right behind him. He had those Red Bull wings going and he was passing people. Not necessarily at will, but he was passing the other cars with the determination and the driving skill of an 18-year pro. He knew what he was doing. He knew which lines he needed to take. And he wasn't necessarily muscling cars out of the way. It was just smart driving. It was fast, intense driving. He was carrying speed in places where people didn't think you could carry that much speed. He was diving into the corners, hitting the brakes, not at the very last minute, but he was out-nerving other drivers, which was enabling him to catch up spots that fast, that early in the race. The car that Max was sitting in, it was its weekend. That car was an absolute rocket. Everything right that could go right did go right. He's carrying the speed. There's no overheating. The tires were lasting slightly longer than the other cars, which is a trait for Red Bull and a trait for Max, that he can make tires last 5, 6, 7 laps longer than every other driver, which helps him in the long run, which is why he's got so many victories. But it was just, he was unstoppable today. He was Super Max. He was Mad Max. He was, you know, the driver that everybody wants to be. He's the driver that guys dream about and girls want to be with. That is him this race. That is him this season. And he was absolutely unstoppable. He was calm, cool, collected. The only time that he was, you know, slowed down even a little bit was about 2.5 laps when he caught up to Checo Perez and he needed to pass his teammate. That was the only time he was, we'll call it, slowed down with massive air quotations, but they still kept pace. They raced like a team, and it was Max's weekend to lose, and it was a weekend that he did not lose one bit. Speaking of the Red Bull Racing, Checo Perez, I mean, besides his shit start, that was the only real negative part of the race for him today. He had an amazing rebound after that shit started. Took about 4 corners. He passed everybody again. Really smart driving. Really consistent driving. And really good defending. There's a reason why they call him the Mexican defense minister. He can defend against everybody. Hamilton, Alonso, Russell, you name it. He can defend against them. And he kept his spot. He showed the other drivers that, hey, it's not just Max that can drive on this team. Granted, he didn't have the pace that Max did today, but he still has that driving skill and that driving ability to set a solid race every single time against every other drivers. Unfortunately, with this race today, the only downside is he did not have the same pace as Max. Now, I don't know if this is just the setup of the cars, or he just didn't have that killer instinct, or whatever the case may be today, but it was just not, he was not able to keep up with Max at all. But he's a solid partner. He brings home the points. He brings home the bacon. He brings home the podium finishes. I would have him on my team any day of the week. Moving on, let's talk about Ferrari. Ferrari, I don't know what they did over the break. I think it was really good for everyone to just stop and think and collect themselves, or just maybe not think and just start to enjoy racing again. Take that time off, have a drink, go to a party, not have to think about racing all the time. But Ferrari's strategy was much more sound than it has been the entire first half of the season. Unfortunately, it was on display for the entire world to hear. It's that this, and even the commentators made comments about this, is that the strategists should tell the drivers what the strategy is. 5 laps, we're boxing. But they can still ask the questions. How's the tires? What do you think? I want your opinion, but we're still going to go with what the data says. Ferrari does not trust or have any confidence in these statisticians and the mathematics at all, is that essentially for the entire race, any decision that they had decided to do, they double-checked with the drivers. Hey, we're going to do this. What do you think? Question. Like, they're telling them it's a question every single time. They're letting the drivers make the decision for themselves, which is amazing. But at the same time, you need to have enough confidence, or at least learn from your mistakes in the first half of the season, to still be able to do your job and tell Carlos Sainz when he needs to box, or tell him that he needs to go faster or go slower or catch up or do donuts, or, you know, make paper airplanes while he drives. Like, you make the decisions, you tell him what to do, and he should be okay with that. This was definitely not the case. Their confidence is absolutely 100% shot, as it should be, because they made some pretty damn bad decisions in the first half of the season. But at the same time, do your job. Ask their opinion, think about it, look at the data, make an educated decision. Yeah, you're not a driver, but still, you should be able to do your job. I mean, as far as the strategy point goes, I mean, it can't get much lower than this. They have absolutely no confidence left in their own decisions. They're asking the drivers to do it for them. These guys have other things to concentrate about, opposed to making sure that their strategists know what the fuck they're doing. Let them do their job. Let them drive. They need to concentrate. So you do your job on that end. I mean, but still, no matter what they came up with the strategy today, they were not anywhere near the Red Bull's pace today. I think by the end of the race, the closest Ferrari to the closest Red Bull was almost 17 seconds. Like, that is just an eternity in F1 time, in racing time. That's unacceptable. That means that you had, you know, a shit pit stop, or something went wrong, and nothing went wrong for Red Bull for Ferrari today. They just didn't have the pace. They could not keep up on this track. I mean, the race was close. and then the race started. That's what it was like today. Carlos Sainz, I mean, he was a threat for the first 15 laps. He drove intelligently. He drove aggressively when he needed to, but he was just not able to keep up with the pace. The pit stops were good. There was no massive mistakes. The pit stops were between 2.1 and 2.3 seconds. That's a really good pit stop. That's an average paced pit stop. And it's just, they're passing everybody else. They're catching up. They just cannot catch the Red Bulls this week and this season. So, I mean, there's still 8 more races to go. Carlos Sainz, I would take this as a major win for him. It was a solid race. He got in the points. It's a great recovery from the last couple of races that he had. No mechanical issues, no massive screw-ups. It's just, you've got the confidence. Now just build on it, man. You've got this. Charles Leclerc, on the other hand, I mean, he started sixth, or he started, you know, further back, and it's just like he gained spots and then something would happen. He would start to challenge and then he would lose pace. At one point he had something in his front right tire was starting to smoke. And everyone's like, oh my God, what's going on? Is a mechanical issue? Is there something going on? They boxed him super early. They had to because it was smoking so bad. It was under a safety car anyways because of the crash. So he had come in and they figured out that it was a removable face shield cover. And it ended up being from Max Verstappen. Like, are you kidding me? What are the odds of that happening? By this point, Max was ahead of Leclerc. And it's like, of all the people, of all the times, of all the odds of this happening, like, go out and buy yourself a lottery ticket. You'll never have to race again. But it was the visor cover from Max Verstappen that he just happened to pick up in his brake pads, which caused the smoking, which made everybody absolutely freak out that something was going to happen. But they removed it, and there was no mechanical issues for Leclerc for the entire, and I mean the entire race. It was a great mechanical race for everybody. They had the pace. It was, I mean, he went all the way down after the first pit stop, his early pit stop, he went all the way down from 17th. He came all the way back up to 6th. He was killing it. He was passing. He was jiving. He was in his groove. But again, he got caught behind some really good defending from Fernando Alonso. He got caught up with a few DRS trains, which means it's just, you know, more than three cars just right behind each other. And then obviously they couldn't catch up to the Red Bull's pace. But all in all, minus a few little hiccups, Ferrari had a much better race week than they have had in many, many, many years. Well, many races, not years, but races so far. So take it as a compliment. Take it as a good strive. It's a good start to the second half. You still have a long way to go, but there's a lot of positives in this race. No one's pointing and laughing this time, and you can't get super, super mad at your strategists for screwing you up because they're now officially asking for permission, and at the same time, you don't have to listen to them all the time. Lewis Hamilton has absolutely made a perfect career of his strategist saying one thing, and he overturns that ruling because he's the one in the car. He's the one that feels the tires. He's the one that knows he can go an extra 10 laps, 5 laps. Hey, I want this tire instead of that tire because even though the data says it's wearing faster, it's actually hanging on. Give me this tire instead of that tire. The one, Leclerc's getting better at sticking up for himself, but there was one issue at the very end of the race where he needed to get, they wanted to go for the fastest lap. He didn't think it was a good idea. He expressed it specifically and very passionately and very clearly saying, I don't think this is a good idea. His engineering saying, acknowledge, and then tells him to box anyways. You have the option to not listen to him at this point. You're so close to the end of the race. Why would you risk losing spots and just potentially screwing something up for taking 1 point away from Red Bull? It was ridiculous. Unfortunately, he did listen to the engineers. He did go in for new tires. He did not get the fastest lap. He was still over a half a second slower than Max, and his car was lighter with gas, and he also had newer tires, like brand new tires, and he still couldn't catch up to the time that Max had because Max's car is a little heavier than most cars. They're over the weight limit. They have to be under by the end of the season, but they're over the weight limit by 7 kilos, and they're working on that. Red Bull has stated that they've got 3 new chassis in the process of working. They're going to shave 7 kilos off, and they are, like $2 million for all 3 chassis. So they're spending the money, they're shaving the weight, but the new chassis also haven't come out yet. So they're still heavier than everybody else, which means you should burn more gas, which means you shouldn't be that fast overall. And Leclerc still couldn't catch him. And just to top off a frustrating day for Leclerc, he also got a 5-second penalty for speeding in pit lane. So when you go in to get your tires, there is a set speed limit that you have to hit before you go in. You can't just bomb right in, slam on the tires just because there are people there. It's very unsafe. And he got busted for speeding in the pit lane. So not only did he not make the time up to get the fastest lap, then he also gets hit with a 5-second penalty. And these times were so close that that extra 5 seconds is going to come back to bite him in the ass at the end of the race. All in all, my race overview is going to say it was a very exciting race. The speed was amazing to see. It's nice to see that they were able to race in Spa this year and not get rained out. It is one of my favorite tracks, but just because it's so long and so many things can happen on that track. There's a ton of places to pass. It's a lot of front-end speed. You can still get that drama around the S-curves. I am very, very happy that they were able to race this year. By the time Max had pulled out and got first, and by the time Checo got second, the race was pretty much over. There was a few really good passes. Esteban Ocon got a couple of double car passes in. Amazing to see these guys are taking more and more chances safely, but in appropriate areas. So that was nice to see. And it was just a lot of back and forth. Not a lot of significant change in the actual lineup itself. I mean, it was Max's race to win or lose, and he definitely won it with a substantial time difference. Besides that, it was pretty drama-free. Everyone was safe. There was one more collision that had happened, and that was between Latifi and Bottas. Unfortunately, Latifi had hit the gravel on the side. It was part of the new safety features of the course. Latifi did lose control and did clip the back end of Valtteri Bottas. Now, he didn't absolutely trash the car. Bottas could have kept going. Latifi did keep going. He hit the grass, but he was able to get the car going again, and he was able to finish the race. For Bottas, unfortunately, because that gravel is so deep for safety features, they want to slow the cars down as quickly as possible. He did beach himself, and that's what ended his day. He could have driven out. Actually, he got pushed out, and then he just got to the pit lanes himself. Really disappointing for Valtteri. He was on a bit of a roll. He's starting to get a little bit more momentum, and it's not really a good way to start the second half of the season with a non-finish. So, unfortunately for Bottas, that was the end of his day, but those were the only two. That was the only other drama for the entire race. It was nice to see. It was a quick race, 44 laps, but you were glued the entire time. When you get to some of these longer tracks, sometimes I find myself wondering and wandering off, looking at my phone, grabbing a coffee, not really paying attention, just because the race can become so boring and so monotonous. It's like watching IndyCar. You know, just you go in one direction, you just go around and around and around. Well, in my world, that is boring as hell. And some F1 races, unfortunately, are boring as hell. But this one from Spa, it was absolutely not boring at all. It was great race, great strategy, and I'm so glad it's going to be back in 2023. So, to wrap things up, your top 10 are as follows. Max Verstappen is in first. He also won. He beat his compatriot, Checo Perez, by 17 and a half seconds. That's how far ahead he was. At one point, Max was 23 and a half seconds ahead of the closest car. He stopped to get tires, and he still ended up winning almost 18 seconds ahead of everybody else, of the closest driver. And don't forget, he started in 14th, and he still won. That's how dominant this man is, and this car is definitely on point. So, Max in first again, won the race, congratulations. Checo Perez in second, Carlos Sainz in third, George Russell in fourth, Fernando Alonso in fifth, Charles Leclerc in sixth. Now, that should have been the other way around. It should have been Leclerc in fifth and Alonso in sixth, but because of that 5-second penalty due to an unforced error and speeding in the pit lanes, that is why Alonso picks up more points than Leclerc, is because a unforced, stupid 5-second penalty error from Leclerc for speeding. Esteban Ocon in seventh, Sebastian Vettel in eighth, Pierre Gasly in ninth, and Albon, Alex Albon, the only useful driver in Williams, picks up 10th, picks up another point for Williams. Congratulations, you are the only useful driver on that team, 100%, and I will tell that to anybody to their face, I guarantee it. So, that is your top 10. The driver standings are as follows. Max Verstappen in a hefty lead with 284 points. Checo Perez with his second place today hops up Frog Leaps Leclerc. He is now up to second with 191 points. Leclerc is 186 points. Carlos Sainz is up to 171 points. He does leapfrog George Russell with 170 points. Hamilton with 147 points, 46 points, I should say. Lando Norris, 76 points. Esteban Ocon with 64. Fernando Alonso is up. He is now in ninth place with 51 points. Valtteri Bottas falls to 10th with 46 points. Something to note, Max Verstappen today got his third hat trick of a race. Now, what that means is he got the fastest lap. He also got first, and he got driver of the day. So he's winning everything. So that is his third hat trick. It doesn't happen very often in Formula One, so it's nice to see that he's getting another one. He's just getting better and better and better. The man is unstoppable at this point. He's not quite an F1 god, but he's pretty damn close. Constructors points. Red Bull is absolutely running it away with 475 points. Ferrari is limping behind with 357 points. Mercedes is 316 points. If Hamilton had finished today, it would have been much, much closer. It would have ended up being within 10 points of each other now in the Constructors Series. Ferrari is going to fall to Mercedes before the end of the season. I will almost guarantee you that. I will make bets on this. Mercedes is catching momentum. They're getting points a lot more consistently than Ferrari is, so Ferrari better watch out. Alpine, 115 points. McLaren is 95 points. Alfa Romeo, 51 points. Haas, 34 points. AlphaTauri, 29 points. Aston Martin, 24 points. And good old Williams, a whopping 4 points in the Constructor Series. And that, ladies and gentlemen, F1 fans, is going to wrap up the Spa Grand Prix weekend. Everybody else, you're going to have to hear me next weekend, and we're talking about the Heineken Dutch Grand Prix, and that, like I said, that is next weekend, is part of the triple header. That is going to be September 2nd to 4th. It is round 15. Technically, this Spa was Max Verstappen's hometown race. His mom is Belgian, and his dad is Dutch. But the Heineken Grand Prix in the Netherlands, that is going to be, that's his other hometown race. It is a sea, and I mean a sea, of orange for Max Verstappen. It's an amazing race. There's flares everywhere. You can't see the damn track. It's an amazing race. It's always an action-packed race. The weather is phenomenal. So, ladies and gentlemen, until next weekend, enjoy the race.
You're listening to the Fresh Take Network.